Hi, everybody. Well, I'm going to abuse the fact that I'm speaking here this evening and just give a little bit of try praying news. Is that allowed? Well, I do it anyway, so whether I get your permission or not. I hate the first 6 weeks of the year, January sliding into February, because as try praying has rolled round every year, there's been this thing that's come, and that is, are we going to be able to have enough, find enough money to put try praying on the sides of and the rears of buses? And 7 years ago it happened, 6 years ago it happened, 5 years ago it happened, and you know, come January the 1st, I wake up and I think, oh no, it's come around again. It's not going to happen. I just can't believe it's going to happen. And yet it's happened again and again and again and again. However, this January, it was not going to happen. I was convinced the eighth year it was not going to happen. £24,000 needed for a strong bus campaign and sides and rears. And to my great surprise and with immense thankfulness to God, we have been given over £24,000 to put ads on buses for the eighth year running. It's just incredible. I'm humbled. I was pretty sure this was the year it wasn't going to happen, but it is. The interesting thing, and some of you may know this or remember it, that last year we, in conversation with an advertising executive called Philip, who said, you need to get some measurement about the effectiveness of your adverts. And he asked me, you know, have you got any metrics? And I didn't know what a metric was, actually. We began an argument, and we ended up getting some research done, and it cost money. And I'm a stingy Yorkshireman, and I don't like to spend money on things which we know are effective anyway. But anyway, we had the research done, and it came out, I won't go into all the details of it, but I was blown away. Because couple of headlines from the measurements which were taken, 500 online surveys of people in Edinburgh and area, that over 40% of the people in this area know about Try Praying. They know the Try Praying logo. And advertisers would give their eye teeth to get 40% awareness of their product. And we've got 40% awareness of the Try Praying logo. Added to which, 7% of the population have, 7% of those 40% have prayed as a consequence of seeing Try Praying on the buses. Now, that doesn't mean they become Christians, but it means a lot of them are kind of putting the first step on a journey. So, in fact, the person that did the research gave this this quote for us. He said, in 25 years of researching advertisers, I have not seen anything better than what Try Praying has obtained in its logo. So it was staggering. We're not only in the Premier League, but we're actually top of the Premier League. It was amazing. So that was a year ago. So here we are, slid into February, the month where everybody loves each other. Thank you for that line. And we have got the money. So beginning March 5th, there will be ads on buses again. However, because people know about Try Praying, advertisers, they phone me from time to time and say, would you like to buy some advertising? And normally I say no. But one person phoned and said, look, you know those big screens at the bottom of the bypass at the Gogoburn roundabout, the 41-meter digital screens, one going in and one going out on the Glasgow Road? She said, we've had a cancellation, and I can offer this to you for silly money. It's normally £25,000 for 2 weeks. We can let you have it for £8,000. And we were interested. And we to'd and fro'd, and I said, being a stingy Yorkshireman, I said, well, if you let us have it for £4,000, we'll go for it. And she came back and said, we've got it for £4,000. Not only that, but I said we'd been given £24,000 for the bus ads, but actually we've been given the extra £4,000 for those digital screens as well. I just find this amazing. I find this absolutely amazing that I'm standing here yet again, eighth year, and we have the potential of inviting Edinburgh to try praying and to begin to connect with God. That's fantastic. We should be excited about that. It's very encouraging. Very encouraging to me, and I trust it's encouraging to you. So, the point of course, of course, is that people actually come to know the Lord and that we get busy with the conversations about Christ that will hopefully happen during the course of this time. Now, I'm going to be looking at Matthew chapter 25. You might wish to turn there, page 994 in the Pew Bibles. Sorry, 995. I didn't particularly want to speak about this, actually. I tried to email John to see if he could switch it, but he wouldn't switch, so I got it. And so it's about the one parable left hanging from the previous series, the parables of Jesus. This is the sheep and the goats. I watched a program this week at some point of Rod Gilbert. Anybody know Rod Gilbert, the Welsh comedian, stand-up comic? He's very funny. He's slightly crude at times, but most people are. But this program was about his chronic shyness. It was amazing. It began with him doing a stand-up routine in front of a couple of thousand people. And then it kind of went into his inner life that he's chronically shy. In that, when he went off to Exeter University as a student, for the first 3 weeks, he dare not go into the student cafeteria to eat because he might have met people. He couldn't even say hello to his next-door neighbor in the halls of residence. He locked himself in a portaloo for a whole weekend because he didn't want to meet other people on the weekend. The guy is chronically shy, and the program was about that. It was fascinating how desperate it was for him. He dare not go into Costa Coffee by himself and order a coffee. This guy's got a problem. And as the program developed, he decided, well, the way he's managed to help himself in this is by actually doing stand-up routines, stand-up comic routines. So he decided to have a little kind of self-help group because he found three other people who also had chronic shyness, and he decided to help them by teaching them a comic routine and getting them to stand up in front of a crowd of people and do their routine. And it was a fascinating program. And these three other chronically shy people at the end of the program ended up doing a little routine in a club in Wales, and everybody laughed and applauded, and they'd made a step forward in their lives in overcoming their chronic shyness. And in it all, Rod Gilbert just came out as a compassionate person, wanting to help people and to enable them to overcome things as he had begun to overcome them himself. I thought, good on you, good on you. Let's read this passage, the sheep and the goats, verse 31, Matthew 25. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he'll separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." And the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." They also will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick or in prison, and you did not help?" He will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. So that's the, well, actually, it's not really a parable. I think people discuss whether this is a parable or not, but it's certainly something that Jesus said, and it's got some figurative images within it. But if you just look, you know, the context of this, this is just before things turned nasty. Jesus is going to be, you know, going into chapter 26, and the plot against Jesus, and then his arresting and crucifixion. But Jesus has been giving parable after parable, instruction after instruction. And he would often say, you know, the kingdom of heaven is like a farmer who sowed seed. It's like this, it's like the other. And just in chapter 25 here, verse 1, Jesus says, at that time the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. So he says, the picture there, it's like this, he says. And then verse 14, he says, again, it'd be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. So it's a kind of picture. It's like this. You're not managing to hear me, Kathleen? Slow down a bit. Okay. Thank you. I must be nervous. So these earlier parables, the pictures, they're saying it's like this. But when he comes to verse 31 and talking about the sheep and the goats, he doesn't use that language. He simply says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory and all the nations will be gathered to him. So this is set differently. He is speaking about a future event. Although there is figurative language in it, he's speaking about a future event. It's not so much a parable, but it's a statement of what's going to happen in the future. So we could probably call this, if we want to be humorous about it, this is how to be a sheep rather than a goat. Anybody want to be a goat? It's also about seeing Jesus in others, because that's what's happening as the narrative unfolds, that the righteous share good things with people in need. And Jesus says, in that you did it to them, you were doing it to me. So it's seeing Jesus in others, or taking the initiative in helping others. I had somebody call at our door this week, and I'm not particularly proud of this, but this guy, I don't know, perhaps you've had them, but this guy was out on probation, and he got a bag of goodies that he wanted to sell, and he saw me, and I sat in the chair, because I had flu this week. I wasn't feeling very bright, and he saw me, and he got this big wave as he walked down our path, and he rang the bell, and he said, he gave his spiel about you know, the probation officer, I just got to have a break, I need to get some money for college fees, can I show you what's in my bag? And I just said, oh, no, sorry, I've got flu. And anyway, we bought stuff before and we never use it. And no, sorry, no, I can't do it, no. He said, are you sure? I said, no, really, honest, I can't. I closed the door. And he went off. I just see the pain on his face. I wasn't feeling very good about that. I wasn't feeling very good, but I wasn't feeling very good about that. So there I was. And then I was due to speak on Sunday about this this passage about seeing people in need and helping them. let's look at this for a little bit. Just leave that hanging there. It begins, the first few verses speak about the end of all things. The time has come. The kingdom has finally come. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, Jesus says. He'll sit on his throne in heavenly glory, and all the nations will be gathered to him. Can you use your imagination and think what that is like? This is the end of the age. This is the conclusion of all things. Jesus is no longer veiled or concealed in human form, as it were, in disguise. But he's now fully revealed in his glory. And nations are gathered to him. And he separates people out, sheep on one side and the goats on the other. And he is the king. The king has come. And the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you. This is an amazing scene. This is Jesus speaking about something that is going to happen. And we will be there. We will be there. We will be present at that on that occasion. And we will see Jesus as he really is. The conclusion of all things has come. It's a hard passage. There's obviously good news in this passage. There's reward for those who have fed the hungry and clothed the naked. And there is judgment for those who fail to do that. And it's alarming, some of this, isn't it, as we read this. It is possible to read this and think, well, how do I become a Christian? What is the way that we actually become Christians? Is it simply by doing good, feeding people, visiting the sick, and so on? Is that how we become Christian? And is that how we lose it if we fail to do this? Is that how we lose our salvation? But I want to say Jesus is not talking about that in this context. And the way of salvation is something else. Can we have that verse read that you read right at the start, Emily? Stand up and belt it out.
Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God.
There you go, thank you. To all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So there's some assurance for us here. At least I trust it's assurance. How do we get into this? How do we know that we are saved? It's to all who received him, who believe in his name. I was referring last week to that amazing conversation I had in Ward 201 207 when Nathan was in hospital, and this guy with a dysfunctional background talking with the person opposite, and the conversation unfolded, and they were talking about Hinduism and then Islam and then Christianity, and then Les, this guy, said to the other guy, he said, tell me, man to man, how can you know if you're saved? He could have knocked me off his chair when I heard that. You know, in 40 years of ministry, I've never heard anybody ask that question before. But here was a 25-year-old guy saying, how can you know if you're saved? Well, we need to answer that, don't we? How can we know if we're saved? Well, it's right there in that verse. To all who received him, to those who receive Christ into their lives, who believe in his name, he gives the right to be to become children of God. That's the foundation. That's the foundation. So what have we got in this passage with the sheep and the goats and the outworking of that salvation, as I would put it? Let's look at the sheep for a minute. Jesus invites them. It's just an incredible thing. It says, come, verse 34, come, you are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. If you have received Christ, that's you. If you have believed in his name, that's you. You are invited in to take your inheritance. Come, Jesus says. And then Jesus says, but hungry, thirsty, etc., and you cared for people that came your way, and you're surprised because you can't ever remember doing that to Jesus. And then he says, in that you did it to one of these, the least of my brothers, you did it to me. So in that we do this to other people, in that we show care, in that we show love, in that we minister to the needs of other people, we're actually doing it to Jesus. We're actually doing it to Jesus. There is something, in fact, Jesus says about his brothers. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 2, he is spoken of as an elder brother for us, that we're all part of the family of God, and that if we show kindness to people, then we are doing it unto Jesus. And he sees it. He sees it. That deed of kindness, that going to visit somebody, or that engaging somebody in conversation who is lonely, or that piece of generosity to somebody, Jesus sees that. He sees that. And in that you're doing it to a person, you are doing it to Jesus. Come and take your reward, he says. This is for you. This is for you. I think at this judgment, I want to say, sheep and goats. It seems that they're already sheep or goats at this point. And they're simply separated. We become sheep by receiving Christ. And we demonstrate our sheepishness. No, wrong word. We demonstrate our sheep-like characteristics. Because Christ is in us, but we live that out. We live that out. And for those who have failed to receive Christ, who failed to believe in his name, the goats, as it were, they demonstrate their goatishness by failing to love, by failing to show kindness, by demonstrating a totally selfish life, never showing any kindness to anybody else. It is important for us as Christians not simply to, as it were, only believe, but to live out our faith in demonstrably to those who are around us, and to show that we are followers of Jesus. Just reverting back to who Jesus is here, the first few verses, the King. There is something which is awesome and majestic about this insight into eternity that we see here. That Jesus is described as the King, and there is going to be this judgment which comes for everybody. There is judgment and there is reward, and it will be just and it will be permanent, and it will be accurate. There won't be any wrong people in hell, as it were. But it is the King, and it's because of who Jesus Christ is. Last week, at least I think it was last week, no, the week before last, I was down in Tunbridge Wells at my mother-in-law's house, sorting out some things, and one of the neighbours called round, or rather I fell into conversation with her, and she asked me the dangerous question, said, "So what is it you do?" And so I said, "Oh, well, I'm involved." Actually, my normal line is, I say, "Well, I meddle." I meddle in the ecclesiastical affairs of the area. That's my line. And people have to ask me a little bit more about it. So I told a little bit more. And I said, "Well, we've got this thing called Try Praying." And I gave her a booklet. She said, oh, that is so interesting. That is so interesting. I wish you could talk with my husband because he's so well-read. He's so interested in all these things. But he's out at the moment. And I said, "Well, I've got this evening." And anyway, half an hour later, her husband was at the door. And he's holding the Try Praying booklet I'd given to her. And we got chatting. And he came in. And we had an hour's conversation. And I don't want you to think that this was the smoothest, easiest conversation that I have ever had. It was really difficult because he's steeped in the occult. The guy is absolutely kind of riddled with all sorts of mystical experiences that he's had over many years. And I felt like I had to be very careful, I had to be very gracious, but I realized that this guy is into stuff which is on the wrong side of the light. So my question to him, and it's a good one for you if you're ever in a situation like this, is say, "So how do you see Jesus Christ? And I think that's just, it's always a good touchstone for people who have mystical experience or weird spiritual experiences. Just ask them how they see Jesus Christ. And he said lots of nice things about Jesus. He said he's a shining one of creation, he said. And he quoted some of the parables and so on. But I realized people can say nice things about Jesus, but Jesus is not a nice thing, as it were. Jesus is not simply an option of many. Jesus is not a shining one of creation. He is the light of the world. He wasn't made. He actually made everything. He is God in human form. God contracted for a span in human form. And he's the author of everything. That is who we have to do, with whom we have to deal with when we're talking about Jesus. He's not merely an option for people, one of many. He is Lord. Jesus Christ is Lord of everything. So when he speaks thus, as he does, about judgment and the end times, he speaks with authority. Some people might not like what he says here, but whether we like it or not, the most important question is it true? Is it true? Some people do not like the idea that God is our judge. But whether we like that or not, the question is it true? Because if it's true, we need to live in light of it and not faff around. As a friend of mine in Hull used to say, well, about people, he said, well, you're going to be dead an awful long time. And and we have to get those, you know, where we're going eternally decided now while we have the option. And what we have is this option, this offer from Jesus to believe in him, to trust him with our lives and to experience eternal life, and then to live out the life that he gives us. John Young, the very Reverend John Young, this morning gave me zero notice, not even a minute's notice, about telling a story. And when he did that, I thought, actually, that story needs to be heard tonight. Uh-huh. Do you know what I'm asking about? That's the story about the guy and the insurance claim, and the tractor. Yeah. Would you be good enough just to tell everyone that story?
He was a young lad. He was called John. And he... hello, John. But he wasn't that John. Wasn't me either. And he lived on the Black Isle where my mum and dad lived. And he'd given up on God. When my mum and dad met him, they went round to see his father and his mother. He said, oh, no, I'm an atheist. And... I think the reason he'd given up on God was because he'd had a sort of childlike faith, or a childish faith, maybe you could call it, when he was a wee boy, but his mum wasn't well. And it was a serious long-term chronic illness. And they had a family farm, and the family farm was struggling because of it, and they didn't have much money, and so he'd sort of given up on God. And then one day I don't know who was driving I think it was the tractor, the farm tractor or something like that. It was a bit of farm machinery. It was on the public road and was involved in an accident with a car. And when it came to swapping the details, they didn't do it there because it was in the middle of the road, and the driver of the car said, well, give me your address and I'll come and see you. But the thing was, they hadn't insured it. They hadn't insured this piece of machinery. And of course, they couldn't afford it because their farm was struggling. And there's all sorts of reasons for it. And the fellow driving the car came around to see them. And they got chatting, had a cup of tea. And I think he sort of had a look around and he got a sense of what was going on. And he realized that they hadn't insured the farm machinery. But of course, they were willing to pay because they were partly liable to it. It was an accident. But he said, no, I'm not going to. I'll just leave this with me. I'm not going to insist that you claim on your insurance that you don't have or pay for this. I'll just pay for it all. And they said, why? And he said, because as a Christian, I'm not meant to go around making people's lives worse than they already are. And it was just an accident. There was no intention behind it. And you can't afford to pay for it, so I'll just pay for it. It's fine. Let's just leave it at that. And so he went off again. He covered the whole thing from his own pocket. And the next Sunday, John turned up in church. And my dad got chatting to him, and he wanted to know more about the Jesus who enables us to be kind. That was basically the story I told. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Thank you. Isn't that amazing? The Jesus who makes people kind. We become children of God by believing in Jesus, and we outwork that in demonstrating that in the way we live our lives. I want you to put yourself in my shoes now on whichever afternoon it was. I think it was Thursday afternoon when this guy came to the door and he'd left and I was feeling bad. And I began to think maybe I should do something about that. I don't know if that was guilt or what, but I thought maybe I should do something about it. And I thought, could I, as he put on my coat and go out and look for him and so on. So I just want you to put yourself, imagine you were me at that point, and just start thinking about why you wouldn't do anything at that stage. Well, you know, what kind of inhibitors, what would stop you, what would stop me from actually going and doing something at that point? You want to make any suggestions? Sorry? I've got flu, yeah. It's a good excuse right there, I've got flu, yeah. Any other reasons which would go through my head which would stop me from doing anything? I feel quite shy. Yeah, thank you.
He's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. He's away. Never find him.
Somebody else might
have seen him. Yeah. My neighbour might have done something. Not a chance, actually. No chance.